Well, the controversy from the March for Life in the Covington High School just keeps getting bigger. Tim and I did a show a couple days ago in which we discussed some of the details at the March for Life and this young man, Nick Sandman. And now there's more news with Nathan Phillips and with the local bishop and with the news and everything, even international news. So we thought we would do a follow-up episode. Here's my co-host, Tim Gordon. How are you, Tim?
I'm all right. Still mad, still hopped up and a little bit sick, but not sickened by what happened.
Yes.
Just mad.
So we're finding out more news on this Nathan Phillips joker, the Native American with the drum.
Yeah, the Indian with the drum, as he's known in my household. So he's not quite the character that was originally pitched by the media, was he?
No, I thought he was just this noble representative of Native American peace, but apparently not.
No, he's something of a shyster. And the interesting thing about a lot of this is these stories started, I don't know what you call it, half breaking Sunday. And I heard half the story, oh, he might not have been in Vietnam. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He actually went AWOL in the Vietnam era, which is all that he served in. I started to hear that story circulating on Sunday, and then it kind of went dull and it got stymied, and now it came back, and there's more too.
Yeah. And then there's also the story that he was part of this group that interrupted mass.
Right. He was leading the group.
Yeah. With his drum.
That stupid drum.
Yeah. And, just imagine, Tim, if there was an enormous assembly of Native Americans and they're doing a Native American ritual, and I and you and a bunch of people from TNT, we come in there and we are chanting the rosary. We got crucifixes and icons of the Mother of God, and we interrupt their Native American ritual and it's on camera. What would happen to us? How would the media portray us in that situation? We would go to jail, first off.
Right.
There would be people outside our houses. We'd be doxxed. It'd be over.
Because they weren't just like doing their equivalent of the rosary. What they were doing, they were banging on the doors, and security, all the news outlets reported that security was brought around. They were trying, you know, effectually to break into the church.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean the big basilica there in DC. And this was I want you to consider this on Saturday night after all these events unfolded, and he was so scared. He fraudulently reported. He led a group of 20 Indians, and they're banging on the door of the cathedral trying to get in.
Well, this is not the cathedral. This is the basilica.
Basilica
of the Immaculate Conception. And a lot of people don't know what that is. That is the patronal symbolic church of the Catholic Church in America. So there's the Cathedral of Washington, D.C. That's the church for the Diocese of D.C. But this church was built by all the dioceses of America because the Immaculate Conception, Our Lady, is the patroness of the United States. That's why.
Okay.
That's why it's so important. Like, this is the symbolic shrine of American Catholics. It's way bigger than the cathedral. The cathedral where they had the funeral for JFK is pretty small. I mean, it's all right. You know, it's down closer into DC, but out towards Catholic University is the Basilica, and it's incredible. You ever been, Tim?
I've never been. Dude, I've been to DC, but I've never been.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Really?
Completely devoted to Our Lady under her title Immaculate Conception. So this is, it's not just that Nathan Phillips was interrupting a mass. This is like the heart of the Catholic Church in America.
Right.
This would be going to like the most sacred shrine or cemetery or whatever of Native Americans, and we barge in and start doing Gregorian chant and waving crucifixes around.
Right, and security has to be called.
I mean,
the story would be dim the other way, even if security wasn't called. If some polite white person went in there and was just doing a rosary respectfully, they'd say you're,
yeah,
you know, you're cross appropriating your own culture into our
right.
ceremony, and they would turn it into something. This is the disgusting thing. People were saying you guys are more fired up with this story than maybe you've ever been on the show. Here's the response. This is open war. There's never been a story like this that we reported on. And I don't remember one that's happened over the past 4 or 5 months since we've been at it. This is ridiculous. It's more than that, though. It's not just media absurdity. It's not just media one-sidedness or bias. It's growing into something new. I mean, the very concept that it's something of a talking point by leftists and moderates. Right. That's that big, predominating, squishy middle that a lot of times we said on a few shows back, parrots the points of the left without even knowing it, and it becomes something of a bellwether. They're saying that essentially the kids had at least provoked the situation insofar as they wore the Make America Great hats. Those, whether or not you take them to be the strict slogan of the Trump administration, are directly identifiable, associable with the Trump administration. And so literally, now we have moderates, everyone except for far right wingers, saying that support of the sitting president is something like treason or something like an act of instigation.
Nazism, support, racism.
Nazis. Yeah, like, or extremism,
yes.
Writ large. How could it be extremism?
For example, James Martin states that they shouldn't have been allowed to wear those hats.
Right.
Well, why not?
What is that?
Why not? They're American citizens. They have freedom of speech. We have a duly elected president in the White House that we voted for, I voted for, who's addressing the March for Life.
Yeah,
and recognizing it. And so these young men, as Catholics, as Americans, they can wear that on their head. It's no problem whatsoever.
Of course, imagine the inverse situation where there's black kids in some sort of rally and they're wearing Obama gear. And
not just that, during Obama's administration.
During the I'm talking, they won. They get to gloat a little bit. That's how it works, folks. And it's not that the left, who are really, really clever, by the way, we have to, one's a fool to not give props to the guys behind the guys behind the guys on the left, George Soros and that, because they win and the right wing in America loses.
Yeah, we apologize.
We apologize. We say sorry. We say, oh, yeah, we shouldn't wear our gear. We should be nice. We should concede. We shouldn't be, conceited. They start calling all manner of natural living when you have your guy in the presidency gloating. The left is hungry and driven and makes sacrifices for its goal. Now it's a diabolic goal, and it's lean and fighting and ferocious. The right, I'm calling out conservatives the way Rush Limbaugh has been. Conservative Americans are pathetic. They're toothless. They're gutless, heartless even, not willing to fight, not willing to stick with their people. And this is always the mark of a losing team in sports when they start turning on each other, get down a little bit instead of saying, okay, we can do this. They start turning on each other. They eat their own.
Well, that's not what we're saying here on TNT. We're saying you got to rally.
No, definitely. But we're not typical American conservatives.
Right.
Typical American conservatives say you can't fight. You can't fight back. You can never use your fists. They've gone pacifist.
Yeah. Meekness is weakness.
Yes.
It's sad that the conservative, the Christian, I would say even especially the Catholic.
Yes.
Has identified our Lord Jesus Christ, second person of the Trinity, incarnate Logos. Uh-huh. Fully God, fully man, as this basically effeminate, weak, almost like a soft teenage woman in a male body.
Right, right.
It's almost like a transgender Jesus.
It is.
And even in some of the pictures and the representations of it, especially in our hymns and in songs, and they go to a Novus Ordo Mass, this trash that's sung, you know?
Right.
It's at best a Broadway musical song, or it's just this sappy, sentimental feeling song that has no doctrine or dogma in it. And we need to get away from just being nice guys, and we need to go back to being nice scene guys.
Right. Exactly. Jesus was, he called a woman a dog. You know, you could do the math. What at the well, the woman's just trying to follow him. He's giving her a little test. Jesus had more profit in him than priest or king during most of his ministry that I see. Ignorance of scriptures is ignorance of Jesus. For people like Trey Parker and Matt Stone that conceive of Jesus this way, I call it South Park Jesus, right? He's just this ridiculous figure of the American kind of fat, well-fed bourgeois.
Right.
They don't know any better, right? They're whatever they are, atheists.
Yeah, he's maybe kind of a hippie even sometimes, you know?
Yeah, kind of a hippie-ish centrist, leaning a little bit right because of the morality. That's Trey Parker and Matt Stone's Jesus. They don't know. This is our guy. If you read one page of the New Testament, you never find this stuff. No. Jesus is not a softy. Jesus is a fighter. Jesus fashioned bullwhips and whipped people and called them dogs, called his friend Satan. So there's not a lot of nice to Jesus. It's just pure holiness. And he is a prophet. He's prophetic. That's one of the offices. And all of these Catholic commentators, not even the Catholic conservative Catholics that threw Sandman and Covington under the bus, but all of the commentators on the right, the American right kind of is nebulously, I guess, Protestant Christian. A lot of these guys, you wonder, well, what are you?
Right.
Don't exactly know what, for instance, Rush Limbaugh is, even though he's good. He's been awesome on this. But a lot of the ones that just want to be friends with the left, which you talked about last time, what are you? And what's your conception of Jesus? It's got to be the squishy one. We should give props to Rush, though. He's been all over
it,
calling out these soft conservatives.
Yeah, he's been on it. Yeah, this is just a big problem. We have to, and maybe we just need to read scripture more. Read the New Testament, folks. Read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Get to know who our Lord is. Read the book of Revelation. Look at Jesus in the book of Revelation. He's not a he's not a softy, weak guy. He's got a sickle, and he's harvesting the earth.
It's a
souls.
Military book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Revelation, he's a military leader.
Yeah. He's, you know, God is a warrior, like in the Old Testament. So this is our tradition, people. We fight. Like we say before, be the Maccabee. The Maccabean War, that's in our Catholic Bible, not in the Protestant Bible. Those guys said, hey, someone's taken over the temple, screwed up our liturgy, Gentiles, let's go out in the wilderness, form a militia, come back and retake the whole thing. And they did, even though they're outnumbered. That's our tradition, folks.
Right.
Not this squishiness. Now, I do want to say there's been a couple bishops who have apologized, and I think we just need to do justice and recognize them. Archbishop Laurie of Baltimore, was it the diocese or him that apologized? I couldn't really tell. It seems like it was a diocesan press release. By the way, bishops, nobody cares about press releases anymore. It's 2019. It's not 1990 or 85. This is not how you communicate with the world. You don't put breaking or this is not right. You've got to be out there in social media tweeting. Now, one who has been doing that, who also apologized, was Bishop Sticca of Knoxville, Tennessee. I was actually impressed by his apology. He actually seems to be kind of defending the boys. So I don't always agree with everything that this bishop tweets, but props to him for actually getting out in the game and showing some support. So that was good. But then we turn to this Archbishop Foyes up in Kentucky, Covington. Man, this guy.
Bad.
It's bad news. Did you see the news, Tim, where he stated that, or he had the meeting with the kids? Allegedly, the parents weren't allowed to be there.
Yes, the parents are enraged.
Oh my gosh.
Over that, by the way, they're. It's an outcry. He had a secret, I guess, on the spot, impromptu meeting. Probably wasn't impromptu from his end, but the kids didn't know they were called in there, and essentially, we don't know what they said. But the parents are mad. some of the parents had pulled their kids out of confirmation classes. There's something of a standoff between the bishop and his flock there in Covington. And this is, again, a positive development given the circumstances.
Yeah. What do you think about the pulling out of confirmation?
Well, I mean, you could go to another parish, right?
Well, it's the bishop.
Go to another.
I mean, technically bishops do the confirmation, so you got to pull out of the diocese, essentially.
You got to pull out of the diocese, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what else.
Call a bishop fillet. Fly him in.
Right.
Hey, get the slap on the cheek that way. Last time we talked about how, you know, back before they changed the liturgy, when you got confirmed, you got a little slap on the cheek, the alapa, which is like, they're coming after you, boy. The world does not like you. You're gonna face hardship in this world as a soldier for Christ. Of course, that was seen as politically incorrect and
of course
not appropriate, so it's been removed from the liturgy. And I love in the comments, Tim, a lot of our older audience were like, I got the slap. And it kind of seems that even some people in the early 70s got the slap. It'd be interesting to know when the slap formally stopped.
We can take a guess. It's 70 to 73, 74, somewhere in there.
Yeah,
sometime early.
Unless you were confirmed in the old rite, like through the fraternity or the society or fillet, one of those guys, you missed out on the slap, folks, and that's just sad. Bring back the slap. This goes back to Christianity not being this effeminate squishiness.
It does.
When you got confirmed and the bishop lightly gave you a little coming after you, you're my boy. Stick with it. Don't look down.
I would be in support of at confirmation telling the confirmee, you know, reading directly from John's gospel, like, you're going out into the world and the world hated me first, it'll hate you. Because, I mean, what sums up this story better than that line from John's gospel?
Yep.
As per, you know, what's happened even yesterday and the day before that, even after the second videotape in Covington broke, the world hates these kids because of Jesus. Like, there's an actress out there. I don't really want to give her. I don't want to give her much credit, but she's an SNL writer.
Yeah.
So we won't use
her. There are children listening, so just be careful with how you read this tweet.
She offered coitus, oral coitus,
yes,
to anyone that punches that MAGA kid in the face.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you might say, well, he's suffering on behalf of the president. But, you know, Kathy Griffin has doubled down saying that she's so upset. Or no, maybe it's that actress. I can't remember who it is, but they're all out in droves and they're saying, well, at the very least, he's marching against women's rights, you know,
right,
on against.
Which is what it's all about.
Which is what it's about underneath everything. They don't like the MAGA stuff at all. I'm not saying that's just a cover, but at the end of the day, they know that this is why people think about this. This is why you only hear these tepid unpologies, halfway apologies from the dioceses and the kind of center people. The left never doubted that this is an enemy, that public enemy number one is Covington High and these kids, Nick Sandman and co. Why? Because he's wearing a MAGA hat, he's white, he's male, and more than anything, he is marching against the so-called right of a woman to slaughter her unborn. So you're, from their perspective, and the left doesn't ever give these weak apologies, which is why a bunch of them aren't, they have their guy. They're looking for the best angle to brainwash that squishy 80% in the middle. That's what happens now. They run the entertainment media, they run the news media, especially from where I'm at, 100 miles south in LA. They run all this in the country. The only reason they're looking for a story, they already know the moral of the story, right? They're just looking for the right narrative. So the moral shapes the narrative instead of the other way around. They already know where they're going to go with it. They need the best, most winsome story to brainwash the the brainwashable, the 80%.
Yeah.
That's what I see here.
Yeah. This has always been about abortion. From the day this, story broke, I like they're going after him because it's a march for life. It wouldn't be a story if there were just some kids walking around the mall and a guy drummed in their face. It's only a story because they are at the March for Life and they're a Catholic high school.
That's right. That's exactly right.
The story disappears if you remove that circumstance. So this is about abortion, people. A lot of people are like, well, this is about, you know, white kids. And that's all true, too. Right. They've rolled the liberals have rolled it all into one big burrito. But this is about abortion. And my wife was saying to me, she's like, do you think they're prepping to fight against when Ginsburg has to go from the Supreme Court? Trump's going to appoint a woman. Maybe he's going to appoint a Catholic woman. Hopefully this woman is going to be opposed to abortion on demand. And so the liberals, who are more strategic than we are as conservatives, sadly, part of the show is we're getting people to be strategic and fight back. But my wife's like, do you think they're just prepping this whole thing? Because in a couple months, Ginsburg's going to go, and it's going to be another enormous war over Supreme Court justice. And they want to go ahead and let everybody know these white, middle America, Kentucky type Catholics are just smirking. They're just pompous fools who don't care about women, don't care about the poor, don't care about babies. They're just mean people who hate Native Americans. Don't you appoint them to the Supreme Court.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's why the smirk is such an important part of the narrative for them, because that word, that verb to smirk, sums up all of that without, you know, all those imputed values, without even having, you know, without the party involved even having to possess those qualities. Right. And that's exactly what's happening. I mean, when the left talks about the Supreme Court, but people need to understand this, they don't care about the Constitution. I went to law school. Most of the kids there are liberal, getting more liberal. They have no interest in it. I was like the only guy plus three that I met that were interested in studying the Constitution at law school. They thought Con Law 1, Con Law 2 were a drag. I loved it. These are the classes I went to. They don't give a damn about the Constitution. They don't care about federalism, right? Which is how right-wing Americanist conservatism works. Whether you're a federalist or an anti-federalist in the 1780s, federalism is, you're operating on one conception or another of federalism. They don't care about it. They want it all from the center. They want tyranny from the center type government. So they don't care about these things when the left, the popular left, the media left, says Supreme Court, SCOTUS. What they're talking about is Roe versus Wade. That's right. Now, people might think this is just some guy making a big claim, but your wife's exactly right. It all boils down to Roe versus Wade. And there's the diabolic connection, the child sacrifice. And of course, what they really care about, the useful idiots, the sexual connection, the ability to not the ability, the forced federalization of all 50 state legislatures of abortion on demand, because abortion is contraception in the last place. So it's all about sex and diabolic sex magic child sacrifice. You heard it here first.
Yeah. So and like my wife said, it's all their language is, she reminded me, you are forcing women to have babies.
Right.
We hilarious. Are making them have these children. Darn it.
We are.
We are so mean.
Jerks.
To be forcing all of these women to have babies.
Yeah.
We make them do that. We mean patriarchal. Nick Sandman, you know, he's just one. He's a future patriarch. Just this mean, smirking guy. He's going to go out in his life. He's going to make women have babies.
He is.
That's their rhetoric. They think that they should be able to do anything with their pelvis in public, in private, with whomever, and there should be no biological consequence to that action. And this, people, shows us that liberalism is contrary to nature.
Nature, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Science, nature. Use whatever term you want to use that fits. God. Well, they would admit that. But the funny thing is, they say that they're pro-nature, pro-science. They've long tried to cast Christians as anti-nature. And the you know, in many ways, American Protestants have kind of helped portray the false light that enables the narrative to go forward. But they're the ones that are anti-nature, right? Remember what Obama said? If my daughter makes a mistake, I don't want her being punished with a baby. This is not punishment. This is not God. Nature. This is not some man. It is nature. It is the natural consequence of one's acts. And that's to a liberal, to the little pea inside the liberal shell, what they're calling a liberal brain. This is a white man who is a patriarchal tyrant forcing something unnatural upon the woman, the natural consequence.
Yes. We're the ones making it happen, which is false. And, you know, these, so many of these liberals are like, I'm a vegan. I'm all about the environment. I'm against global warming. I only eat non-GMO foods. I shop at Whole Foods. I'm crunchy. The whole thing is part of that, you know, worldview. And it's like, okay, but you are taking the birth control pill. You're taking synthetic hormones to stop the natural consequence of having sexual relations.
Right.
Well, that's different. You are putting implements into your uterus to take out a fetus, to remove it. That's natural. Like, you wouldn't put, you know, an unnatural banana in your smoothie, but you'll allow a doctor to put these things in you to remove this child,
right?
Or inject chemicals in you to induce an abortion. It's so ridiculous. They want to be natural in every way, but we conservatives, we Catholics are saying, well, the very centerpiece of human nature is this miraculous, this amazing thing where a rational soul is given to your child that is formed in your body, and that this child is everlasting. It's immortal. It's going to live on for eternity, either in heaven or hell. Wow. Now let's talk about society.
Right. Yeah, it's our birthright. It's our birth. Yeah, you're talking about crunchy, natural, whatever.
Yeah.
This said, the beating heart of the what should be the natural movement. I don't, you know, in my household, we eat tons of non-organic. It's delicious. I don't care. Right. I'm not a big recycler. I don't care about organic. I don't fit in California, people. This is why we're trying to get the heck out. But what
free
we
the
do
Gordons.
Follow.
Free the Gordons from California.
Free the Gordons.
Free them.
Yeah. Gordons as whales. Free Willie Gordon. Yeah, we are natural when it comes to our birthright. It's more important, like you said, conception, the font of human life, our natural, our rational souls are mute at this moment. It's really important to get this right, and they don't. You know, all of this contradiction wrapped into whatever you want to call it, the female versus male rhetoric that slipped into the popular culture, like stolen it like a thief in the night. It's stolen into the American discourse by the left. I read all of that in the smirk, real smirk, on the face of today's Savannah Guthrie as she interviewed Nick Sandman the other day. All of this feminist garbage, right? Boy, if you go watch that interview, I don't know if we can get it or whatever here.
Yeah, I think today would come after us if we showed it.
So people go watch it. She is passive aggressive. She hates this kid. It's a faceplate. She's staring across at this kid and she asks him, "Why were you afraid? Why were you afraid of the four African Israelites or whatever they're called?" Yeah. I don't care enough to get the name right. "Why are you afraid of these four violent thug idiot pieces of garbage?"
Yeah.
There are only four of them. Didn't you feel like there were many more of you? After they were calling him the worst names possible. Yeah. The kid smirks at this old fraud. We need to report the full extent to which this Indian guy is a fraud, but If the kid smirks at the guy, that's a threat. He's going to tear him apart. And none of these Savannah Guthrie types report on that. But literal threats and, you know, pitching of the kids as a threat by the African Israelites, saying that they're future school shooters, like a threat to be eliminated.
Yeah.
This is the rhetoric of a conflict is about to happen. And they're adults and the kids are, you know, they're young men. I don't want to infantilize forever. They are 17, but they're immature young men.
Right.
Didn't you have numbers? And she's like, and come on. Didn't some of you yell racist things back when they're yelling these horrible racist things at you? Go watch the interview. You'll want to yeah. get up. And
she's continuing the leftist agenda that this is a mean future patriarch who's going to oppress minorities and women in America. That was her job before, when they were putting makeup on her and getting ready to roll camera and get the lights ready. Someone, you know, like in a boxing ring, was like, okay, you go in there, you go and show this guy, he's a future smirking patriarch. Got it. Okay. Go in there and do it. And I would have never let my kid go on the Today Show.
No.
You know where Nick Sandman should have been? TNT right here. T. Marsh and T. Gordon.
Are you telling me no one at Covington watches the show? I don't buy that, frankly. Yeah. I don't buy it. We wanted him here, and that was a foolish move to have him go on there, because he did okay. But again, don't set your kid up in a position to be knocked down. But I think people need to take a moment. Maybe they don't believe you, but they need to drink in what T. Marsh just said about like a boxing manager. Right. They're there and they're like, this is the goal. So what I said earlier, too, about the moral of the story that the left wants to shape. It's an anti-moral. It's a diabolic moral. Shapes the narrative, not the other way around. So like, OK, here's what you're going to do. It's sophistry. But, you know, the opposite of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. If he says this, you get to the goal by going this way. Take this route. If he says kind of the opposite thing and he's starting to sound a little better, he doesn't play into your trap this way, then you take it back toward the goal this way. That's how news is done. And people need to understand that this is not some exaggerated portrayal of what popular media is now, what mainstream media is. All of these people have handlers. They well understand the goal, the end. So they don't even need to be told that, but they all have handlers. This is how news and entertainment works. It's all very deliberate. It's not an accidental force in the background. They're going for a discrete, specific goal.
Yes.
And if you don't believe that, you will continue to be a soppy, pathetic conservative, without teeth. You have to understand this is not just the stuff of Alex Jones and extremists. I mean, Alex Jones got this right. He was saying it before anyone else. And yeah, he's extreme on all these other positions. But if you don't believe when you go watch today's Savannah Guthrie interviewing Nick Sandman, that she has nothing but disgust and disdain for this vile Trump kid and Catholic, then you're a fool. I don't know what to do. You're lost. Yeah. If this whole story doesn't do it for you, people, where you want to... You're ready, almost like, I don't know what I want to say. Almost like a 1776 moment where people are getting tired of it. In this case, it's not a governmental act, a legislative act. It is an act from, technically speaking, the private sector, the media sector, the way it's spinning this stuff. Then I don't know what'll do it. If this won't do it, then you have no heart. It's a ticker problem, as they say in Rocky.
We all thought, oh, okay, they're going after Trump. We get it. You know, okay, I voted for Trump, but I'm not going to tell my neighbors I voted for Trump because that's kind of embarrassing. And we'll just let the media trash Trump. But he's kind of, hopefully we'll do some of the conservative things we wanted. That's a lot of people in America, right? Everybody woke up this past week and said, oh, they're going to go after us. And they're going to go after our kids.
Right.
And even if we do something, what used to be mild, I'm pro-life, you're now suspect. I'm Catholic. You're now suspect. We're going to invade your sanctuary with a drum and interrupt your mass. We're going to put cameras in front of you. We're going to make a nationwide news story and persecute your family. Come after the bishops. Run all these stories. We should talk about Nathan Phillips and his stolen valor and his lies and his history, because this guy is not a good man. Before we do, though, Tim, can I just say a word about, because you mentioned them, the African Hebrew Israelites of Jerusalem?
Yeah, I think it's really important.
Let me just take a minute on this, because people are like, who are these African Hebrew Israelites? So this whole thing kind of started in the context of, you see these black guys and they're shouting out all these profanities and calling them, you know, faggots and all kinds of stuff that the liberal left should be all over, but of course they're not. They ignore it. The little, you know, what, Nick Salmon's a racist, but these guys over here who are calling out all kinds of racist and homophobic stuff are just free pass. Anyway, these guys are influenced by the Black Panthers.
Of course.
They do not identify as Jewish. So just a bit of history. There was 12 tribes of Israel. The northern 10 tribes went into exile. The Kingdom of Israel, they identify with that. So they call themselves Hebrew and Israelite. They're actually against Jewish people. They're actually an anti-Semitic sect, right? They believe that those northern tribes were black. They're black. Some of them actually believe that the real Israel was not where we know of the Holy Land, but was actually kind of in Africa, in Northeast Africa. It's kind of like Nation of Islam. They're sort of a mutation of Islam that's for militant black expressions of race. But they've done it in a Jewish way. Well, not in a Jewish way, sorry. In an Israelite way. And they actually do recognize Jesus, but they're kind of in the whole idea that Jesus was a black guy.
Right.
And so they follow the law and the prophets. They reject all synagogues, rabbinic Judaism, the Talmud. So they don't really follow what we would identify as Judaism. So that's what they are. And they see themselves as a light unto the Gentiles. They don't seem to believe in an afterlife. They believe you have to achieve heaven or hell here in this life. So that makes them very militant, obviously. And they're against the Euro-Gentile establishment. Euro-Gentile establishment. So for them, the enemy is the European,
white
man.
It's a political action group.
It's a political action group that has the veneer of Old Testament Israel with a little bit of, and we think Jesus was a good leader. But I guarantee if you put a mic in these guys' face, they're not going to believe in the Nicene Creed or that Christ has a hypostatic union of the divine nature and the human nature and second person of the Trinity. It's going to be a bunch of garbled up
nonsense. Where are they from? What city?
Chicago.
What city?
They're Chicago people.
Chicago is where all of, remember the community organizing?
Yep.
Nation of Islam. Remember what was happening? Chicago-based thugs in Philadelphia, all around the elections, intimidating voters not to go vote, white voters, and somehow they figured were conservative. This is that stuff. This is the new Black Panther movement. And look how they're acting.
The Euro-Gentile is their enemy. So they're out there making fun of these white kids. They're against the Euro-Gentiles.
Right.
As they call them.
Yeah, they don't like Jews. They don't like Gentiles. Where does that put them?
They like black people.
They like black people. And you know, whatever they say about the New Testament, they're a joke. You can't be any sort of Christian if you don't even acknowledge that Jesus was a Galilean. I mean, this is like the most basic point of fact about the historical Jesus. I just want to say it again, and I'm not being cheeky or salty or proverbial or what have you. When it's a political action group, and when people are out there counter-protesting, which is a good idea. If I could get over this cold, I might actually take the fam to San Francisco because I'm so mad over this Covington thing for this weekend's.
Don't go to jail, Tim. Don't go to jail. We need you next week.
You're pushing me, baby. Just this stuff. Like, we do need to.
Because if you went to San Fran for that March for Life, they are going to make fun of you, your wife, your kids. They're going to be just like these African Hebrew Israelites.
Oh, I've done it before.
And the code of honor is not going to allow you to just be like, have a nice day. God bless.
Yeah, right. Well, isn't that what Christians do?
Yeah.
Like, no, I mean, there are some ways of avoiding it all. I've yet to say. But if I go, maybe you could do like a little quick check-in TNT episode, like, and I could just show you some of the freaks that are out there. They're freakier than at the DC one. Well, we can talk about that after.
San Francisco, for sure.
Oh, it's wild. It's a wild scene.
I don't know. But I'm nervous, Tim. I know you, and I just, you're going to be in jail. You mean handcuffs.
Yeah, that's what Steph and I were talking about last night. But look, what I'm saying is not going to instill confidence, but people, when they're in the situation, now before I'm in the decision-making process, but when you're in the situation and you see a bunch of kids getting picked on by a Black Panthers racist scumbag political action group, you have to act, people. You can't just feed the kids to the dogs. And sometimes, I'm sorry to say, the new pacifists used to be a leftist thing, are now these right-wing sissies out there that say, oh, well, you know, whatever. No, you got to defend these. They're young men. I don't like the infantilization of 16, 17-year-olds. They are young adults, but they don't know what the hell they're doing. You got to act. And this is why.
How awesome would it have been, Tim, if you and I were there as like the chaperone and we just went into a full like dialogue, like debate with the African Israelites? Would have been all over it. I would have been like,
of course,
theological debate. Let's do it right here. Turn on the video cameras. Let's make it happen.
It would have been awesome.
It would have been awesome.
Here's the thing. The left does not want to debate. Political action groups do not want to. I mean, maybe you could have them do it. Some of the kind of outliers on the left actually try to do it, but then their handlers get them and they're like, you're not understanding something. We are not about ideas.
We didn't hire you for your mind. Yeah.
We did not hire you for your mind. What did Marx say to Hegel? Hegel's mistake was that he tried to understand the world. The goal is to change it. That's these people. They know they lose on ideas. This is one thing Miley Yiannopoulos would always say that I think is dead on, is that conservative kids want to turn everything in the streets into debate club. I like the idea of going and engaging and saying, look, we can have this debate peaceably. Jesus was a Nazarene. Smoke them. And we could. I just am skeptical. Maybe it would begin that way. Maybe the guys keep it there. But they're interested in the escalation, I think. Yeah. I mean, look at what Nate.
They would provoke.
They would provoke. But I like the seed. I like the idea of you and I being there and we could have felt it out. But I mean, look at even Nathan Phillips. You wanted to bring it around to him.
Yeah.
Look at even his behavior in the face of the kid. Right. You see spit coming out of his mouth. His face is here. He's yelling. You were kind of mocking me saying the drum's not a weapon. You thought I was taking it to a litigious thing. I was just saying when a man is in the face of another man, and you have a striking object like this, and you're doing it close. Let's pretend our faces are really as close as they look on the split screen here, right? I'm doing this. I mean, look at this. It has all of the imagery and all of the spatial particulars of striking the kid. And I watched the video 20 times, and it's just really close. And he's yelling, and when he's doing his little, like, war cry or whatever he thinks is so dope, you know, that he's seen on 100 movies. So he's been in a bunch of movies and music spots. You can tell he really thinks this is cool, whatever it is. He looks like an idiot, but he thinks that he looks really cool. And he understands what he's doing. He's in this kid's face. And he also has a history. He has a track record of that is criminal. So I was not jumping to any conclusions when I first heard this on Saturday. And I was like, I think this guy's a thug.
Yeah, he claimed to be a Vietnam vet. That's false. Vietnam vets out there watching, y'all need to raise hell on this. This is stolen valor. You don't go and pull the flag, oh, I'm a Vietnam vet, and get sympathy from the United States of America when you're not a Vietnam vet. That's wrong.
Right. For sure, unless you're John Kerry. But like, I mean, yes. So he said that, then he changed it to Vietnam era. And now it comes out that he went AWOL 3 times. So he's a crappy soldier.
Yeah. He was Washington in jail as a teenager.
Jailed as a teenager. Washington Examiner says he's charged with escaping the Nebraska penal complex. He pleaded guilty to assault June 19, 1974. Now, let's put this narrative together in a way that the lying garbage can media never will. This is everything I was saying. This guy, I was saying it in my home. I wasn't saying it on our last show. This guy has all the trappings of an assaulter. And that's where I was going with the drums. He knew what he was doing. He was very comfortable in that kid's face. He's a damnable liar when he was saying he felt threatened.
He was hoping that that kid would push that drum out of the way.
That's right. Yeah. As all assaulters do, as all abusive husbands do. Oh, right. What'd you do? Like to a little 100-pound woman.
Yeah.
He was also charged. Go ahead.
He was 19 and he escaped the Nebraska penal complex. So here's Nick Sandman. Good kid. Out peacefully as an American wearing his MAGA hat at a pro-life march. Meanwhile, close to that same age, Phillips is in jail as a teenager, escaping the Nebraska penal complex.
Yes. Yeah. But he's the hero. He's the leftist hero.
He's the poor Native American who got smirked at.
He also had a negligent driving charge. He had a minor in possession of alcohol underage 1972, then again in 1973, then again in 1975. So he's a repeat offender. In 1978, he was charged with driving without a license. It's not the grabbiest thing in the world, but given all the other alcohol things and the assault, he's a little thug. And he's also a wannabe because he's been spotted in all kinds of popular videos. There's the strong suspicion that many people have that he's a paid activist or an actor, not much of one. But you could tell the way he's trying to do these little chants. He thinks these cowboy Indian movies are really cool. He's trying to be one of the Indians from the Indian movies, and he thinks this is lending nobility to whatever cause he believes in. But he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You got a definite starkening of the sides. There's a definite left here, a definite right. People that see this and can read the signs of the times, like the Polish parliament member,
the Polish minister.
His name is Dominik Tarzynski, member of Polish parliament. Of course, is Tarzynski. He says, "I'd love to invite you, Nick Sandman, to the Polish parliament. After watching the video, I'm now standing up for these wrongfully accused young men. And all of you." I like how he says all of you. What, all good Americans? Because that's how we feel when we hear a leader talk like a man.
Yeah.
"You're very welcome to come speak out what you believe in." I mean, I'm so disgusted with American conservatism. My whole life I have been. I really have been my whole life. But what a feckless flounderfish is American the average American conservative. What
so
a
true.
Shame I have in them. Pathetic.
I've told all my kids, look, when you finish college, I will pay for you to go to Poland for a year with the purpose of finding a spouse. We have no Poles in our family, but I want my grandkids to be Polish, man. I love the Polish. I like their politics. I like their Catholicism. I love it. I've met Polish immigrants who went through the process and became American citizens here in America. They're so impressive. They work hard. They're smart. Everything about Poland I love. So I'm like, kids, son, I want you to go to Poland, spend 9 months, date a Polish girl, bring her home.
That's funny.
Then my daughter, all right, you're going to Poland too. I just love Poland. To all the Polish watchers out there, love you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Becoming the city on the hill. You know, I mean, they still have a lot of, you know,
it's not perfect.
Second world troubles from, you know, what happened in the middle of last century. And they're still turning that around. But, you know, the one way to turn it around, you got that in your back pocket. You got the one way to turn it around. The one, not to launch into my book, Catholic Republic, but the one way to turn all this filth around is, you know, the light of the world, and by that I mean Jesus, but I mean Jesus through the church,
Catholic
and,
church. And
it's I think we're beyond the pale now.
Yeah.
I honestly, that's my view. Now I don't take the fashionable hardline fatalistic view that it is too late. It is beyond the pale. We are past the point of no return. But that's what I suspect as a culture. I think. If I'm a betting man, I know where I'm betting. I think we're done.
We're going to have to wrap up early because you got to run. But the end game, people, is if someone says, oh, you're a Catholic, you go to jail. It's happened in history. It's been going on for two millennia. It's going to happen again. That's the game plan in America. Hopefully it doesn't. But before they get to, oh, you're Catholic, you're going to jail. Before that, they're going to try this on you. You're a racist. And this is why everybody's freaking out, Tim. Everybody realizes, oh, my goodness, they're going to call us racists. What were the chess pieces in this game? The African Israelites and the Native American. And the story that they're using in America is that white people, you, Tim Gordon and Taylor Marshall, enslaved black people, and you're evil and you are a racist. It's part of being European, period. Especially if you hold to traditional European values, a.k.a. Christianity, you're even more racist. And when it comes to Native Americans, you are a colonizer. You killed these people. You stole their land. Shame on you. Shame on you. And we could just back up into a corner and be like, yeah, we're so bad. I personally enslaved black people and I killed these Native Americans. Or we could say, no, it's not true. Right. I'm a Catholic. I love all people. I'm not a racist. I had nothing to do with any of that. That was hundreds of years ago.
I kind of wish we began this show on this point because I think it's really, really, really strong and squishy kind of, you know, maybe right of center white people in the suburbs out there that are kind of sharpening their tools or maybe beginning to, I'm hoping, you know, need to hear it. Like, yes, here's the thing. If someone accuses you of being a blue colored alien, what do you do? Do you sit there and do you spend 20 minutes dissertationing on you're not a blue colored alien? No, you laugh at them, right? I mean, it's fine to deny it once in a half a second. That's a bunch of crap. Now, then you laugh at them. When a white suburbs person, you smirk in their face, but you got to pair the smirk with some good rhetoric.
Yeah.
You laugh in their face. And you essentially, you might say it once, but then you say, look, I don't care if you keep repeating that. Because the left knows that the average 15 pounds overweight, kind of right of center guy in the suburbs is not the sharpest, you know, tool in the shed. He's not a right wing revolutionary. He's not Jefferson and James Madison writing the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions that are lean, hungry. They're right wing revolutionaries, which is what we need. Right. They know that these guys aren't racist. These guys would be, you know, trembling in their boots if anyone thought they're a racist. And that's why they're imposing it. So the main thing to do is say, okay, I put it out there once. Race and color matter nothing to me. Now, creed matters a little more. We'll have a dialogue on that in a second. But you can keep calling me things. But I'm going to make fun of this Indian guy. Not because he's Indian, but because he's a scumbag. I'm going to knock him out. That's the thing. I'm going to knock him out. Get your drum out of my face.
Yeah.
And these four scumbags over here, these Black Panthers, rebooted Black Panthers, I'm going to knock them out. It has nothing to do with race. And I'm going to quit saying after this that it has anything to do with race. But they're my enemy. People need to identify their enemy. Like Sun Tzu said, you got to know your enemy and you got to fight your enemy.
Right.
And they're not
our enemy, like you said, over race. They're our enemy because they want us to go to jail.
And worse, they want to kill us. They want to silence us. They want to kill us. They want us to not have our natural rights of property. Right. They want to have us to be parted from our natural right of the liberty, particularly of conscience, religion. These are the enemy. Of course, it has nothing to do with race.
For them, it does, because they say you are the what they call Euro-Gentile complex. They want to destroy the. So for them, it is about race. For us, it's not.
We have to hit that point strong. This is why all the people that came out, the middle people that came out worried about the race issue are fools, pitiable fools. The left is obsessed with its racism. Mm-hmm. Hitler, famous, probably the most famous leftist of the 20th century, right? Most famous socialist of the 20th century. Imposed the precise rhetoric of today's left. He identified a racial group and he said, this racial group has a position of privilege over you. So who is he talking about? The banker class of Jews. The banker class, this racial group is in a position of privilege, but the Jews are white people. You heard it here first, right? The Jews to Hitler are white people in modern socialist. It's basically international socialism instead of national socialism. But Hitler identified the Jews. This left group identifies white Christians. And you know it got ugly from there. They want to take it the exact same direction. First, they silence you. And then, I mean, they don't want you even to be able to smile. Yes. Hitler tried to make it illegal for Jews to remain in their home. That's quite a breach. These thugs that we need to fight them intellectually, but that doesn't work. It's going to end up getting uglier than that. And people have to ready themselves for a real actual fight. Hopefully it's not an armed conflict,
right.
But they want to stop a kid from smiling and holding his ground. They're saying he shouldn't have held his, even with all the fake apologies, the apologies out there, they're saying he shouldn't have held his ground.
Yeah.
Do you realize that?
Yeah. They're saying he should have given away to the African Israelites and to the Native American drum man.
It makes me enraged. Maybe people can tell. You got to fight.
Yep. So, and the best way we fight, as we always say, we're not always saying that you got to put on some boxing gloves. The main way that we fight primarily is a spiritual battle. The Battle of Lepanto was won because Europe was on their knees praying the rosary. So as we always finish the show, you need to pray the rosary, people, every single day. If you're not doing 5 decades a day, you're wrong.
That's good.
You're not doing your job. If you're not doing 5 decades a day and you're watching TNT, you're just not with us. You're not in the battle, right? We've got to be taking up the spiritual arms. And the easiest, simplest, most powerful way to do that is the Holy Rosary. So pray the Rosary every day, at least 5 decades, as was stated in Fatima. We've done, how many hours have we done on Fatima, Tim? 10 hours?
No, 15.
We've done 15 hours on the message of Fatima. So we got to get into that.
Akita.
Yeah. And we've got to know our faith. We've got to know our intellectual tradition. Right. And we've got to have some virtue. We've got some fortitude, people, to not back down. And we got to teach that to our kids, too. So that's all I got to say. You want to add anything?
Yeah. 2 points of clarity. One. Yes. Always the spiritual combat is ontologically first. The reason I was giving a seeming chronological priority a bit ago to the actual fight. It's not always just a metaphor. Like they say about jihad, you can declare jihad on smoking, but in the first place, jihad is actually a struggle. Is spiritual combat's number one. This is where we live or die ultimately. So you got to be doing that stuff. Taylor's right. But also it sometimes involves making the whip. Right. It sometimes involves a non-proverbial struggle. That's all I'm saying. And we seem to be there. I'm not being over specific here, but this Covington thing is a moment. It's a shot across the bow, and people have to take it that way. Point of clarity number two, I meant to do this at the very beginning. I called Laura Keener in the diocese. They're still having diocesan troubles. They had a suspicious package and they canceled all activities yesterday in the diocese. Laura Keener, I called her principal. She's a diocesan rep. I don't know if this is superintendent or what, or a hired consultant. They're being vague with what she is, so it wasn't all my fault. But I called her principal. She's not. Robert Rowe is the principal of the school. And we're getting some stories that he is being supportive. We also got one story, a direct account by the parents, that Bishop Foyes was being good to them and the kids, but we're getting crosswise information. So it's become a sinkhole, an informational sinkhole. But I wanted to say Laura Keener is diocesan rep. And that's all I got.
Good. The clarification. So, all right. Well, folks, if you like these videos, please hit the like button. And of course, hit that subscribe button so you get more good videos from TNT, Taylor Marshall, Tim Gordon. And I pray for all you guys every night when I pray my rosary. Pray for us. Pray that we're protected. And let's have virtue. Let's know our faith. Let's pray the rosary. And let's not let them win. All right.
Ditto.
God bless. Signing out.